Welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast. Jaybird.
Steven. How are you?
I am. There's no rest for the wicked, Jay. There's no rest for the wicked. Just grinding here. It's that March Musky madness going crazy here. Fishing with Sideshow Brian today. Grinding out there. He's a
very
podcaster.
Cool. Yeah, he is.
Having a good time, boys.
Awesome.
Anyway.
On the water and then on the mic at night.
On the boat. Anyway. So, you know, you come get off the water, you deal with your shine on crazy boomer, and then that's a story from another time. Shine on you crazy boomer. So, sorry, inside talk on a program. Sorry, I'm just trying to make Jay laugh. Jay, how bad's the snow where you go?
Well, we got more coming tonight, of course. What are you gonna do? Just another little snowstorm. We don't exactly have melting weather in the forecast, but see what happens after this week.
I knew people were snowed in when Jody Michael got a text from Freddie Mercury Palermo.
Oh yeah,
he's making the crappie wagoons. How bored are you?
That's the truth.
Yeah, how bored are you? Making the old crappie wagoons, folks. Sorry, Jody does the blog letter and everything for Musky Shop, and does the. It's funny. I can't talk her in, Jay. Like, obviously, we got Musky Shop TV, right?
Yeah.
The dream would be, like, it just ends with Jody Michael's recipe, like the old Babe Winkleman. If we could just have, like, Musky Shop Kitchen, right?
I know. She throws a recipe in just about every issue. It's very cool.
Here's how to cook you some crappie.
We got some bluegills going there and then pan frying them in a little bit of butter.
You know, what are you going to do?
With a dinner roll.
I know. It's like, how 80s would that be?
Yummy.
Dude, the 80s fishing shows were awesome because it was always like that. Somebody's wife at the end, like, doing a cooking recipe.
And yeah, that's very true. Very true.
Anyway, stupid. I give her a mortal hell, if you can't tell. But other than that, holy crap, folks. Two big things. So first off, we're still doing housekeeping this week, right?
A little bit.
We're so behind on Q&A. We value it. We literally still Q&A questions stacked up since the electronics episode, Jay.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember when we did that. So if we've not answered your Q&A, resend it, please. I'm sorry. I hate to do that. And if you're like, hey, they haven't answered it, they're jerks. Just ask it again. We get so many emails here at the podcast and the app. Thank you so much. The app's going to be kicking up as far as like some new articles and stuff getting ready for spring. That's going to pop off here very shortly. Booker's been putting out his Reloaded. Fishing with Joe Booker. Reloaded. Been hitting the Reloadeds. Those are out. You can check them out on the Tube of You or right there on the front of the app. He's been doing that. Got some hot new articles coming out for season opener here. So that's going to be kicking on the Musky 360 app, all your moon phase, all that stuff. But two big things. First, we're going to talk about what's going on at the Musky Shop this week. But probably the coolest thing I get to tell you guys. Right?
Yeah.
Very, very, very shortly. Can I say the day, Jay? Am I allowed to say the day? Okay.
I wouldn't see why not.
Okay. Here's the deal, guys. Podcast comes out on Sundays, right?
Yeah.
So we're doing housekeeping this week. Going to talk about a really cool sale at the Musky Shop, right? Next Sunday, I'm going to have a whole podcast dedicated to Titan and Titan Jr. for a very good reason. I won't tell you the day, but you can figure it out. So we're going to talk nothing but Dive and Rise. I've got some people lined up that we're going to have do some clips on there so you're not hearing it from us. So big, 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 big Titan Jr. news next Sunday. Gonna be lit. Freaking, I'm going to say it. I love throwing that thing.
I'm telling you, obviously I'm biased. It's if you're fishing southern stuff, or say you're throwing the Titan, it's like, okay, you're getting the follies, you're not getting the eats. This downsized version is just killer, super easy, the same mechanic, super easy to use. Whatever. Sick of hearing about it. But next week is Diving Rice Masterclass. Going crazy on it. But this week, Jay, dun 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 dun, what's going on at the shop?
Big giant sale. We will be starting, you guys might remember, a few weeks back, we had our biggest sale of the year. It was 15% off darn near everything in the store.
Darn near.
I knew that was coming. Yeah. I knew that was coming. Oh, set myself darn near. Up. Yeah. But, that's what we're going to be doing. Yeah, this is going to exclude, Daiwa reels and St. Croix rods. Unfortunately, we can't put those on sale.
They don't want to have fun.
And Shimano reels.
Don't want to have fun.
Nope. But pretty much everything else on the website is going to be 15% off. This is a big sale.
Catalogs, 15% off.
You can check out our new catalog. We've got the online version right at the top, upper left corner of the website. You can look at the, if you didn't get a catalog this year, obviously send us an email or click on the form on the website and we'll send you one out for free. It's a 150-page catalog, and it's got a ton of stuff in it. So
pictures of Jay.
Probably not, but I think there's a picture of you in there.
There's always tons of pictures. I mean, there's a picture of you in here. Sure. There's a drawing. Anyway.
There's a drawing. Yeah, anyway. So, yeah, it's a big sale, so take advantage. You know, it's still show season out there, and I know a lot of guys cannot go to these shows because of – quite often the weather. the shows lately have been all out east and stuff, and it's just like if you live in Minnesota or northern Wisconsin, that's I don't know how anyone could do that, drive to Pennsylvania for a couple days.
No, that's the thing.
Tough. So we offered online and quick shipping and the whole nine yards. We've always got new stuff coming in. I mean, every week something new comes in. You know, check our website on the top. We put all the new entry stuff, try to filter it up towards the top of the new stuff, right up there with the Titan Junior. So
awesome.
Like
stuff.
Steve just said, that thing is coming out very, very soon. So we'll have our Titan Super episode next Sunday.
Yep. And you got, I don't know, I'm just looking here. Actually, I was going, while you're just laying it on there, I was actually going back. I saw the Gooch's Banana on the new and featured. I like that bait. Anyway, okay. The Gooch Banana, if you will.
We got some new hot tails in this week.
Jay,
the new version called the Nugget.
How big is your Gooch Banana? How big?
Dead air.
Dead air. How big is a Gooch Banana?
I don't know how big that thing is.
Measure your Gooch Banana. Okay. God, I'm sorry, folks. I'm brain dead. I was on the boat since sunup. All right. Hot tail Nugget. Look at this.
Hot tail Nuggets.
Okay. Yeah. So,
cool little glide bait. And you've thrown that, right? Because it just came in.
I've had them long before the Nuggets were available. I was there when the Nuggets were formed.
Wow.
No, been throwing them for a while. Anthony at Hot Tails hooked it up on some of them. What's cool, folks, I'm looking at it. Steve Paul Tiger in the Nugget. Wow. That's cool. Ice Perch. Thanks for sending me one, Jay. I appreciate it. I've actually called Jay. I said I got an email from the dude. He's like, hey, man, I like your color. Glide bait. He's like, what are you talking about? Anyway, blotchy walleye. Those all look great, man. Super cool baits.
Yeah.
Great. Here's what I'll tell you about that bait. So, 6-inch bait, 5.5 ounces, right? It runs where a glide bait should, because you have some of these small little downsized glide baits. Well, most of your downsized glide baits run shallow. Well, when should we be throwing glide baits, Jay? When things are cold, slow, and tough. Where are muskies? They're deep. This is perfect for that. It's going to have a faster sink rate. Got a really nice wobble. When I'm throwing the Nuggets, if I'm throwing it on like a slower reel, 5.3-1, I'll do rod pops. But like with my fast tranks, just handle turns, get that thing doing everything you need to do.
Sure thing.
A cool thing to do with that bait too is every now and again, don't, and this is just a glide bait thing. Don't sit there and go left, right the whole way back to the boat. Pause, please. Right. We've said it before. Make sure you're throwing in some pauses. But I like how the nugget looks if you just do a real short, bursty, straight retrieve, right? Like a speed burst. It'll just surge forward, and it has a plenty of rock action to it, right? So it's got a rocking kind of thing. And then you go, like, pause, and then go back in your glide thing. That's a super cool bait. So 15% off sale starts when, Jay?
It'll start officially Friday morning.
Friday morning.
So. But I think you can cash in Thursday night.
Casher in. Just be watching for it. That's a great. Yep. It's the stock up for spring. Get your stock up for spring.
We'll have plenty of information on social media in the upcoming days here.
In your email. Anyway, God, moving on. Let's get through it. We got to get through some Q&A before the extravaganza of next week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to paraphrase this one. Tony from Crystal Lake, long time, first time. Love and wait expectantly for podcasts. I normally replay old year episodes from the same weeks to help refresh the knowledge you impart. That way I get 3 to 4 podcasts a week. Jay, should we do 4 hours of podcasts a week so he doesn't have to listen to old episodes? What do you think? We just do this every night until one of us just sucks the bluing off of Smith. Anyway. Moving on. Let me keep. He says something nice about Jay. Nobody wants to hear that.
Don't want to hear it.
No, you don't. Please keep it up. Bruh, the reason message. Okay. All right. He just bought Pan Optics. Right? He's hoping it's a game changer. We're planning to use it. As suggested for figure eighting, that's the only way to do it. If only someone was writing a book that explained all this, Jay. Could you imagine if somebody had a musky book that had a whole chapter on Pan Optics? It'd be amazing.
I think it'd be helpful.
It would be. We just purchased our equipment. Okay. Did you buy a lithium battery? Let's ask that. I'll ask you a question. Make sure you have a lithium battery because Pan Optics will eat a deep cycle in a heartbeat. Get you a lithium. We believe that we have the concept that are challenged by installation, placement, setup, and application. Could you please explain in greater detail and possibly even provide a video? Yeah, let me get on that for you. How to prepare and install our units for upcoming season. We appreciate everything you do. I laugh at that. I would do a video had I not been 14 months behind on the Toad video, Jay.
So, at least.
Let me put that. Let me just tell you, speaking of the Jody Michael blog, if you go to the Musky Shop blog, it's on the website. She actually covered me, right? She's got my six.
Yeah.
She, if you want to know how to top load a Toad, she goes, I'm getting emails about this. Why have you not done it? Right. People are emailing her at the app and everything. And I go, well, 'cause I'm busy. She's, well, how do you do it? I'll write the freaking article for you, you moron. Right. So she
literally, that's what she said.
Yeah. Pretty. Oh, that's, yeah. We play rough here. no holds barred.
Yeah, I know.
No holds barred. Much like how I'm coming at Jake the Snake Smitty Smith.
Cage fight. Bash. July 15th. Musky Shop parking lot.
Musky WrestleMania. Anyway. So I would gladly show you what's going on with that. If you're willing to wait 15 months, I'll get the video done for you. set up on Pan Optics. The way I have mine orientated on the boat, I have a turret on the front of my trolling motor. So I run a Minn Kota Altrex, and there is a motorized turret that can be purchased that mounts onto the Altrex, right? And then I have a support bar. So my trolling motor turns independently. And I have a separate turny-do, if you will. That's the scientific name for a turret. Turny-do. That turns via remote control and a foot pedal to position the Pan Optics at the angle that I want it. While I can move my trolling motor. Now, when we rigged Krieger's boat up for it, he went with a motorized turret that's mounted to the side of his boat. Right, that he has to deploy each time. So Herbeck's boat's the same way, where his is on just a standard. So Josh has a motorized turret that is independent of his trolling motor. So mine's on my trolling motor. My trolling motor, I deploy my trolling motor. There's a turret attached to it that moves independently of that. Krieger has his trolling motor. His turret for his panoptics has nothing to do with his trolling motor. It's a separate drop down, right? And then like Herbeck is running the Lowrance live image, and he has a hand turn pole. So he's just got a pole that he drops down over the side of the boat, right? And he positions that manually and then locks it in place. So there's three ways to skin the cat.
Sure.
So where do you fish out of the boat being number one, right? So let's say you and your son fish front and back. You're going to need to fish in that transducer. So it's looking down the gunwale of the boat, the side of the boat, and you can see both of your figure eights. Okay? Or you're going to need to fish both in the front or both in the back or front or back and mid. So you're not just, you just don't have one guy that's getting the benefit of this. Right? Now you need to understand the beam angle of that transducer. The Garmin LiveScope is only 20 degrees. Right?
Fairly narrow.
Break out your protractor. Right? 20 degrees. Not big. Jay, do you have a protractor on hand?
No, I don't.
Okay, just checking. So, from the center of that transducer, it is coming out like a pizza slice, right?
Ooh.
Skinny at the end, wide at the top, right? So the crust is wide. So from the transducer, it's tight at the transducer and widens out the further you get away from it. So where I'm at in my boat, because I'm dealing with current, so I'll run backwards all the time, I'm near the transducer, so I see very little of my figure eight except for the first turn and into it, right? However, the guy in the back of the boat, my client, who's actually in the front of the boat when we're drifting, I will see fish coming in 20, 30 feet out. So you need to think about the orientation of the transducer in relation to where you fish in the boat. As far as mounting, the way that I do it is I drop my trolling motor down and I'm in, right? So that's convenient for me because I don't have to do a two-step thing. So if I'm moving spots a lot, I'm not like, ugh, right? I got to pull the trolling motor up. Now I got to pull the panoptics up. It's not two steps to do it, right? And you need to figure out if you want it motorized. So like me and Krieger both have them on foot pedals and remote controls where we can like switch sides of the boat and the thing turns on its own and you can position that transducer any way you want it. Or do you want it on a manual adjustment pole like I mentioned with Herbeck's where, you know, once he gets it set, if he wants to change that beam or he wants to see where a fish went or he wants to look in front of the boat to the side of the boat, he's got to unlock that thing and manually turn it, position, and lock it back down.
And Jim's running the same type deal.
Right. So you've got those three options of how you can mount the thing. Mm-hmm. So for me, I am the king of just starting a boat with the trolling motor in the water anyway. So I realized I needed to drop the coin for one that went on my all tracks because if not, I'm going to break this thing off. You know, I'm going to forget about it. So for me being more focused on at all times, I'm thinking about what muskies are doing, not about anything else. I'm just scatterbrained. So I wanted to make sure that it was a one-stop shop. So, you know, maybe you have, if it's a father and son set up or you always got a boat partner, the boat partner's responsible for pulling that thing up or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that's up to you. Obviously, if it's attached to your trolling motor, you got to have an independent support. So I have this like thing that goes between the shaft of my trolling motor and the shaft of my turret. And it's like two weird bearing things that they can swivel. It's crazy. But you need to think about that. So like if it's attached to your trolling motor and it's got these supports and all that crap, it's probably far more expensive than putting on a PVC thing and using a RAM mount, right? Or you can do what Krieger does where he's got the turret and the turret's on its own mount and it's hung over the side of the boat and he's got to manually put that down. Or you just, like I said, you could put that, the LiveScope, mounting bracket on a metal pipe or a dense PVC pipe and shove it over the side of the boat and use some kind of locking mechanism, whatever you think is going to make the most sense for you, right? There's a bunch of different companies. I don't know the companies off the top of my head where you can look up Panoptics or Live Image mounts. And there's a ton of options. There's a different bunch of different price points. It can get crazy. You know, if you have an automated turret with a remote control and a foot pedal, I want to say I was well over $1,000 just for that. So, you know, it gets expensive. I mean, it does. I mean, I hate to say it. It just is what it is. You go, all right, we've got a, you know, 5,000. But to be honest with you, off the top of my head, for my Panoptic setup with screen, with lithium battery, with all the crap, we're probably, what, $4,000, $5,000? I don't know. It's goofy, but it's expensive. But it is what it is. Welcome to 2023 where we can see fish under the water. So, you know, depending on cost is how I do my mounting. The most important thing is just where you intend to fish on the boat most of the time. Because if you're in the nose of the boat, if you're in the nose of the boat all the time, I would almost recommend that the transducer's behind you so you have a wider view. Now, you're going to have to conceptualize where that's coming from and all this stuff. If you need a concept of how to apply an application, just once you figure out your mounting, where do you intend to fish from the boat? What kind of mount are we going to put it on? How is that mount adjustable? Right? You need to get out on the water and you need to just start figurating and you'll go, okay, there's my rod, there's my line, there's my bait. And just focus on that and you'll understand what the transducer angle needs to be at to see that bait coming into the best of its ability. The way I run mine, I'm not seeing a ton of stuff. I'm seeing 10 feet, 20 feet before the figure eight. That's it. I'm not really worried about looking for fish on the edges. I'm not out there sharp shooting muskies. I'm not interested in that. It's not my deal. But I'm looking for really solid extra information on deep following fish.
Sure. Exactly. Do any of these companies, Steve, make wider transducers as an accessory?
No, that's it, dude.
Really?
Right now, it's 20 degrees. So when you see guys that will run, and I've humored it a bunch. Do you run multiples? Are you running like $13,000 worth of this crap? You know, you can put those beams next to each other and pick up wider and wider and wider. Now you're on dual screens or you're stacking. There's a lot of different options there. Heck, I'll tell you guys something. If you don't know this, this is worthwhile. So Garmin has the Active Captain app, right? I often sit on my butt and watch people figure eight or watch a live sucker on my cell phone or my iPad because you can stream in real time your Panoptics unit to your phone or an iPad. So if you have two anglers fishing, you can set up a second screen with a mounted iPad so you don't have to be jockeying to see the screen at the same time. So that's kind of a cool thing. Now, you're only seeing one transducer. You can't do like two or anything like that nature, but it'll mirror image the screen that you have. So that's a great way to get into it. If you need two screens in the boat or you want to watch, you know, you want to sit on your butt and not stand up, you can sit in the captain's chair and look at your cell phone and watch a live sucker. So that's a pretty handy thing. They don't really advertise it too terribly much. But it's the Garmin Active Captain app. You set it up. Your Panoptics unit, at least mine, is the GPS map units, which are not the they're like more saltwatery, from what I understand. It has a Wi-Fi signal. It's putting out Wi-Fi, and I watch that thing in real time. So if you need a second screen, that's pretty cool. Anyway,
technology is amazing.
Tom, what's the difference between swim whizzes and believers, if any? I know they're older baits, but do they still apply to musky fishing? Are they worth trolling with? Should I invest in some or grab some old ones? What do you think? Swim Whiz and Believer. Really?
Well, I know the biggest Swim Whiz they make is only goes up to 8-inch. They do make 10-inch Believers and bigger. They're fundamentally the same bait. You know, they've got two line ties, they got a shallow and a deep setting. They come straight or jointed. They make 6, 8, and bigger models on the believers. They're classic trollers.
It's Homer LeBlanc on crack kind of deal. I mean, they haven't changed much. I mean, dude, I'm looking at the wall. I mean, I've got tons of, you know, dad left me all his stuff and, you know, tons of those 10-inchers, 8-inch. I mean, that was the headlock of the day.
It was, right.
That was the trolling bait. Let me grab one here.
Yeah, and they're all kind of that ABS plastic, so that lighter plastic, that real buoyant right. kind of feel to it.
Is this a hollow? I can't tell you. The thing is this, I should be. The famous believer. Here's a...
Yep.
This thing's been chewed and glued a few billion times. Here's a jointed one. I would say this, and I am no expert on these baits. Ran them a bunch. I run swim whizzes now. But in moderation, it's not, excuse me, it's not something I'm jumping up to grab, right? But I don't see the difference. Like, we would talk about the difference between a Jake and a grandma, right?
Yeah.
Totally different bait. I'm not seeing the difference. Where I go, okay, swim whizzes are killing it over believers for me. Or believers are killing it over swim whizzes. I don't know if there is a major difference. I don't believe that there's a weighting difference. I don't believe that there's an action difference. Maybe
I'll be 100% honest with you. I don't have a lot of feedback from customers, and I don't have a lot of personal experience between the two that would indicate any kind of obvious differences.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
sorry.
And a lot of people in the industry listen to this podcast. I'm not trying to offend anybody at all where you go, I just don't see it. And if you know, like, you're like, oh, there's an obvious difference between, you know, size for size believer and swim whizzes. It's news to me. Now, I would say the last time I've actually really focused on swim whizzes and were trolling them, I caught fish, right? I mean, they've got a really fat action. They generally do. It's just one of those things, like, I don't really hear about it, Jay. I don't hear people freaking out about these anymore. But these were the bad daddy trollers. So muskies don't know. They don't care, right? You can still catch fish on anything. I mean, it doesn't matter. If they caught muskies in the past, they're going to catch muskies now. And like I said, when I was fishing them, I sort of grabbed some out of the garage or out of the garage and bait cave just to try it. And I keep a 10-inch believer and like 6 or 7, 8-inch swim whizzes in the boat, and they get used very, very, very rarely, right?
One trick you can do with those things too is run the shallow setting with the rod tip up, and that thing's got that crawling, and use the jointed model.
Yeah,
very, and have it just breaking the surface a little bit, or run it just breaking below the surface, I should say, and it's a really good looking crawling surface bait.
Oh, it's like, are you saying cast or trolled?
Casted, yeah, casted. Yeah,
I mean, I like throwing. I mean, the believers. I mean, I just remember both the believers and swim was in the 90s casting them a bunch as a kid, but. You know, it's just one of those things. I'm sure some dude on St. Clair's just still tearing them up on these things. Let me hang this bait back up. It's just sort of, it's losing its thing.
There's a lot of people still using them. It's just the quieter scope of people probably, you know. We saw a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, they go. I mean, I would say if you're a serious troller, get your hands on some. They're really consistent. I'll say that, right? Very fat action. Run a little shallower than you would expect. And, I mean, I think it's a dynamite bait. I'm sort of left to the point where I go, I don't know what to say because I almost feel cruddy for, you know, I love that question because I almost feel stupid because I'm not using them more. You know, I'm looking at, you know, my dad, obviously. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. I mean, I'm just counting this row of them. just big 10 inches. There's 11 there, and there's a bunch more down here. So I probably got 30 or 40 of these big 10 inchers and countless 8 inch and disjointed. I go, there was a reason. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it's like one of those baits that do a revival. You know, there was a reason those are effective. There was a reason they stood out from all the other trolling baits of their time. They probably have a really solid place in your musky game. I've just sort of let them slip along the wayside, which is kind of pathetic. So, but it's true. Yeah. It just is what it is.
Yeah.
You know, when you're addicted to matlocks, what are you going to do? Matt, I said matlocks, and here's Matt. Matt, please, I need help repairing bulldog tails. I have a couple that are separated completely in the tail. No, the tail is not gone. Just the tail is cut in half from being cut, nipped at by northern pikes or hook fouling, and the tails are separated in the middle-ish area, right? How do you fix bulldogs that are cut in the middle of the tail? Ouch. Okay. Pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Pain in the butt.
Everyone's been there if you saw plastics.
Okay, so here's what I do to do that. So envision, if you will, dig, if you will, this picture, Jay. We have a bulldog tail, and you just take a pair of scissors and you cut the sucker right in the middle, about where it starts curving. All right.
Okay.
Now we got these two halves. You know, you've ripped it, your buddy stepped on it, whatever it might be. Gluing them, because they're about, that's a new one. You know, we're very thin. We're just, there's not a lot of material there. It's not like putting a new tail on the whole bag. The only trick that I have is this. I will take those sections and grab bucktail wire or some thin wire, usually leader wire, okay, and cut two tiny pins about quarter inch.
Right. Huh, interesting. I see where you're going.
Right. Huh. I will take two little pieces of wire, preferably leader wire, thin like jerkbait leader wire, and put them in one side. I will use that to line that sucker up. And so now the tail has a physical up and down. So when you try to glue these tails together, the problem is trying to line it up. Line it up with those two pieces of wire, right? Try to get as clean as you can. And then take a hot torch, one of these crack lighters, I call them. You go to the gas station, Jay, and they're like the trigger pull lighters, right?
Yep.
Wave it back and forth on one side. Don't try to move it until it cools, right? Whether you got a good adhesion or not, sizzle that son of a gun for a minute. Wait till it cools. Flip it over and try it again on the other side. If you're lucky, it'll stay. If you're lucky, it'll stay, right? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Just depends on how it was, where exactly in the tail section it was, how much material you're working with, and if you got lucky that day. Right? It's a tough spot to mend, but it can be done. So lining it up with the wire, the little bucktail wire, and that wire is going to stay inside that tail. We forget about it, right? It's, you don't, not worry about taking it out. It's just to line it up. If that does not work, and now I'm frustrated, Jay, I'm mad. Uh-oh. I will pull that apart, and I will simply take the tail, the rear section, right, that's broken off, and I will lay it on top with just a little hangover, about a quarter to a half inch, and just fuse them together. Muskies don't really care if the tail is stacked on top of itself, right? So I'll lay the bait out on its side, flatten the tail that's still attached, lay that on top of it, and weld them together with my hot torch.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's ugly, but it works. If you're insistent that it be lined up, and I've caught fish, dude, it doesn't, literally, if a muskie's going to hit a bulldog, he really is not looking if the tail's like slightly stacked on top of itself to mend it together, right? It just looks like crap. The other thing I'll do, and I keep all my old bulldogs, by the way, all my old Medusas, bulldogs, if they're done, I keep them. And the reason I keep them is I'll use parts. I'll cut little chunks off of them. And so I will take that tail, if this doesn't work, I'll take two patches. And imagine you're like trying to patch. You're trying to put two boards together, and you're going to put a board on either side of them to line it up, right? It's like extending a joist or something of that nature. I'll cut little squares and melt it on one side as a patch on one side of the tail. Let that cool. Flip it over and do it on the other side. Now you've got a lined up tail with patches on it. Looks like crap. Still fishes great. Who cares? Right. That is the bush fix, the best way to do it. You know, you're guiding. I don't have time to sit here and fool with this crap. I don't care what it looks like. As long as the tail's working and it's not tearing off, I'm good, right? You know, obviously, your next stage is call Muskie Shop and have them special order you replacement tails, and then you're just cutting the butt of the bait off and starting at square one. But, dude, notoriously, those northern pikey poos and stuff like that, tail grab and just tear these things to crap. So being able to bush fix them, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, if you're fishing any big rubber, Jay, there's these butane torches. Like I call them the crack lighters. You got to have one in the booze in the boat. They're infinitely helpful for patching stuff. Yeah, we use them
all the time when we fish together. Yeah. And if you want to try a glue, for tears and minor stuff.
There you go. Yeah.
Mended glue.
That stuff dries fast, and it is you're probably right. That's not a bad way of doing it, too.
Yeah, that stuff seems to work best on most of the formulas that the Bulldog's currently using.
Did I ever tell you I took some of Booker's Mend at one time and glued my hand to one of his tackle boxes, like, instantly?
Did you?
Yeah, I poured it everywhere, like the top. That stuff is really watery, dudes. That's the one thing about Mend it. It's viscous. And it dumped out, and I like got it all over my hand. I'm glued to the top of a Plano box. I'm like, Joe, you're going to have to rip this off my hand. I can't.
20 minutes later, Joe reaches for bait. He's going to change out, and he can't get his box open, and he probably didn't have anything nice to say.
It was annoying. Absolutely. All right, the Toad Loader. Love the podcast. Where I fish is mainly shallow with a max depth of 15 feet, right? Should I consider heavy-duty bait such as Mega Monster Medusas or even Pounders, or will they go too deep? Is there really a serious application for these heavy rubber baits in such shallow water? Yeah. If it's maxed out, I mean, in a knee-jerk where I go, yes, there's application if you need deep, fast rubber presentations. Right. If you need to get something that's moving and grooving, I mean, it's hard to do a shallow dog or a mag dog at really high speeds and it still run deep. Right. So that would be a consideration. If you're like, okay, these fish like it fast in the late fall and things of that nature, I can see torturing myself to really, because you're going to have to keep that thing moving, right? If you're, say the boat's sitting in 15, and you're throwing it up into 8 and 10, you're going to have to keep it moving, but it is applicable.
Yeah, sure.
Now, it might not be applicable to your body of water, but that pattern happens places. So it's worth getting one or one of each and testing out the theory of, you know, it might play, but, you know, those quote unquote deep running big rubber baits are fast baits, in my opinion, right? Big, fast, tons of action. Now, obviously, you can work them slow and low and blah, 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 blah. But if I'm on shallow water, it's not completely discounted from my mind that they could be applicable in that sense, that they could be a really deep, really fast presentation. Randall, how do you control trolling speeds with big baits while you're fishing a large chop? Say 2 to 3 footers. I'm looking to up my late season trolling game. Okay. Couple things, Jay. 3 footers. Just going to say. Here's the thing. Yeah. In general, a 3 footer, a legit 3 foot wave, if you're sitting in a seat in your boat, right? Is going to be somewhere, the crest of that sucker is going to be somewhere at eye level when you're in the trough, right? So what I always tell people, and this is just a rule of thumb, and I'm not saying he's not fishing 3 footers, but a lot of people are like, oh, I was in 2s and 3s. That's 3 feet from the bottom to the top, which is, you know, 30. It's a lot bigger than you think, right? And I'll hear these guys, we were in 5 footers. No, you weren't. So, I mean, the worst, and it happens though, because what I'm getting at is a lot of people are like, it gets blowing twos and threes out here. Jay, when we were in Minnesota, that was three footers.
Yeah, it was
that
brutal.
Was straight three footers. And that's about as nasty, like past that, I'm off the water, right? I don't want to be in those at all. But that is sort of my cutoff, right? Mm-hmm. How to efficiently troll through that? Here's the only thing I'll tell you. And I am just going to tell you flat, Randall, you will not catch me dead trolling through three footers consistently. I can't remember when I've done it. But just a moderate thing of boat control, right? Power up. Ease back down. So you could stay consistent in your overall forward momentum, right? If you power up the wave and then back down when you're coming down it, right? I don't know if really, I mean, obviously it's going to make your bait surge wildly up and down. It could be a dynamite presentation. I just don't know if it's legit twos and threes that it can be done where there's a consistent running depth and speed, right? Because now you actually have, let's say we're running flat lines, right? The rod tips are coming out. We're running boards. Your gear is going to be getting trounced, right? There's going to be waves breaking over rods. There's going to be trolling planer boards, even if you're running like the blade that can handle even stuff like that. It's going to be trounced. So,
and that's exactly what you said. The consistency is out the window for your mm-hmm. for your program. You know, anyone could get lucky, and you could get lucky in that situation.
Right.
You know,
it would be hard. And like I said, dude, more power to you. You got stones, buddy. You got stones, and I trust me. There's guys that'll do it. There's crazy mm-hmm. people out there. Randall is probably nuts, and I commend you. Congratulations for being nuts. I will not join you. So I will not. Would not join you on the boat and throwing three footers. Something that I do in Big Chop, and this is just a point for the sane people that might be doing this Big Chop. If I'm having a problem with the boat rising, right? Because as the boat lifts, mm-hmm. the rod tip lifts, right? If I'm in like 1 foot, 2 foot chop, which is not uncommon, I will jam my rod tip down in the water significantly, right? Which as my boat rises up, meaning the rod rises up and the tip rises up, pulling the bait up, it's not as great of an effect, right? So you can compensate by dipping the tip of the rod in the water. It's still going to lift the bait up, but not to that high of a degree. And there's no scientific formula. Like if you're in 2 foot waves, put 2 foot or a rod in the, it's not that you're just helping yourself out a little bit. Right. I don't have any scientific thing there. Jay, we have such the monstrous sale and the monster episode coming up. We're sort of trying to just get through. Let's do one more here, folks. We're going to hit you next week with a super long one. We're phoning her in. Steve's got to get up there early. Jay's got to go testify on behalf of Fritz Chatterworth tomorrow morning. He's got to get sworn in. We'll hit one more here. Tracy, I have a couple creepers, and yes, one of them is Steve's favorite bait, the Savage Gear Bat.
Mm.
But I've not done any good on them. When should I be throwing creepers? Okay. Creeper, creeper, creepers. Well, I can tell you the last creeper fish in my boat, Jay, I was so wrong. It was ridiculous. And I'm the first to admit when I'm wrong, right? I look at the guy. I'm like, listen, they caught it. And I always say this. I may have said it in the podcast before. They call these creepers because you creep them on the surface, right? And the guy looks at me, So I want you to throw this out here. Let it hit the water. And I want you to reel it. So it's just going prop, prop, prop. And he's like, right?
Yeah.
Like, will you shut up so I can cast? I'm like, So throw it out there, you know, just point your rod at it and nice and easy. He throws it and just proceeds to burn it back to the boat and get smoldered.
So, really?
Oh yeah, dude. I was like, happy you got the fish. On the other hand, it's like, dude, I just told you to throw that thing out there. I mean, you know, I'm glad he got the fish, but you're like literally.
Yeah,
like,
basically, yeah, you're overworking it. Slower, slower,
right,
slower.
Right. The guy's like, Oh, you're letting me throw a topwater. Just shut up. And, you know, he had one thing in mind. He's just going to turn the handle. Got crushed. What can I say?
That's funny.
And with that being said, I have actually thrown creepers and really gotten them moving and caught fish since witnessing that, where they're and I love the ones with a bitten.
Yeah, the bitten tackle creeper. Oh, yeah.
Great, great build. Was it Daryl, I think? What's his name?
Yeah,
Daryl.
Yep.
I know that guy tests and tunes every single one of them. Get one black one of those, and you'll never need another creeper. They're awesome. Primarily in the past, I had thrown them at really shallow cover and worked them stupid slow, right? Over top. But hey, this guy shoved one up my old keister by just burning it. So that changed it. And I've subsequently caught fish burning creepers. It's a ton of action. So maybe you don't have to creep your creeper. Maybe it's alternative if you're seeing a lot of tail prop baits. Because you take that bit and tackle creeper and you burn it, it's doing something. It is making a ton of thump. When to throw them?
I mean, that's your classic low light presentation thing where the water is relatively calm. They don't work great in waves. They just
No.
So fairly calm water, and you know, right away in the morning, and it's an excellent bait if you, let's say, somebody gets a fish up on a bucktail and you know, and it's like that fish look kind of hot or whatever. Go back with a creeper, that slow presentation, but crawling, it's like sometimes they work like that.
Before, like I said, before I knew you could catch fish smoking these things, as you it's again, don't burn a creeper. And I you know, gotta catch the, it was a monster, to be honest with you. But I had really focused on creepers as a like middle of the night, you know, full moon July, full moon June, you know, that night fishing thing is a really good loud slow presentation, because you can slow down a creeper far slower than you can slow down a top raider or a
tail bait.
Tail bait, fat bastard, or a tallywhacker. You know, Jay loves to get his gooch wet. So there's all
whopper plopper,
you know, any of that. So you can slow it down a tremendous amount. With that being said, obviously it's been proven you can burn them. So I think it's just an alternative topwater. Again, slow presentation, slow moving fish. I used to use them a bunch in the early season, but they can be used in other ways is what I'm getting at. I don't think there's a bad time. If you feel there is a topwater bite, I think that's a good time to throw them. I know Josh will kill me for saying this, because he fishes those freaking the two super stock chains, super pressure, like the E3 Lake and Eagle, right?
Yeah.
Dude, everybody throws bucktails and topwater out there, but nobody hardly throws a creeper. And so if you want something to sound different, that's about as different as it gets. Because, Jay, when's the last time you're on the water and it was raining Frenchie LeMays? 1965. You know, it's not like it's not a popular bait. So if you're fishing pressure water, it's a really cool alternative to all the tail prop baits where, you know, there's muskies on the Three Lakes chain that could literally name you every car of top raider because they've seen them all 30 times.
A lot of tail baits in those situations up here.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And so if you're pressure water, that would be an application. Like I said, dude, don't be afraid to turn up the heat on those. It's worked for me. Like I said, if I see a client bust a big fish on it, I'm going to add it to my game. Believe you me, and I've done it, and I'm going, man, this is kind of dynamite.
Musky Safari makes some creepers, too, that are made to be turned the heat up on. Mm-hmm. And they
I didn't know that.
They come in pretty high. Oh, yeah. Like
they're
that,
intentionally fast?
Yeah, the Spitzers. Pretty cool.
Spitzer.
They run pretty quick.
Spitzer.
Nah. Loud, frantic crawling action of a scurrying baby squirrel.
And freaking the loud, frantic crawling action of J.S.E. All right, one more. Carl.
Feral.
I'm looking to get into bucktail building, not for commercial uses, but for my own and for my buddies.
Mm-hmm.
What are some basic tips you guys have for building bucktails in small batches? I don't want to make one bucktail, but I'd like to make a handful that match. How do you do that without buying a ton of equipment? Okay, I got you. So what I've done in the past, if I want consistency. Now, here's the thing. Here's a tangent for you, Jay. I don't really care about consistency. I'm the dude with a box full of blades, Jay Cena. I got a big old Plano box, Jay. It's full of blades and this, that, and the other, and skirts and wire and sinkers. And I will sit down like a little dirty pirate and build a bucktail in the boat, right?
Yeah.
Two pairs of vice grips. You go, I don't care how long it is, moving on. It'll work. Catch fish. Jay's watched me do it. Build a bucktail. Five casts later, fish in net. Hurrah, hurrah. Good for me. So I'm not really being super analytical about anything other than, and this is my first tip of bucktail building, the end of your blade, right? Let's say we're throwing a number 8 Colorado blade. There needs to be just a small amount of clearance from the top of the skirt to your blade, right? That'll allow the blade to open up. So we went just, yeah, let's call it for, we're friends here. Let's, for argument's sake, Jay, let's call it 1/4 inch.
Good.
Right? That will dictate how many beads or spacers I put between the skirt and the clevis. That's all I'm spacing out, right? That's it. So, That's sort of my build. If I'm going to build one in the boat or I need to rebuild one or whatever, just about 1/4 inch clearance between the skirt. And I'm talking the skirt pulled back like it would be subsurface, right? So take your skirt, pull it back, and then get 1/4 inch of clearance there. That'll tell you how many beads you need stacked. As far as making them with consistency, I'll tell you there's that. And I know you said not a lot of equipment, but I'll obviously say it. There's the bucktail vise thing. Muskie Shop has. What is that thing, Jay?
The Boggs Tackle Maker.
Boggs Tackle Maker. That'll get you pretty good.
Yeah.
If you want clean stuff, we have the American Fishing Wire, like the line bending, like a hand tool, like a hand little thing, right, Jay? Where the wire bender. Do we have those?
Yeah, the round nose pliers.
Yes, round nose pliers. Let me see if I'm not talking out of turn here. Can you believe I'm supposed to know all these amazingly big words like round nose pliers?
Yeah, AFW make ones, it's like $13 or something.
Knipex. Is it Knipex? K-Knipex?
Knipex.
Knipex.
We call it Knipex. Yeah, they make a great one.
They got a round bender. So I'll use the round bend wire thing to make a really clean end on my bucktails if I care.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The best way I've found to make consistent bucktails on the cheap is get you a piece of 1x1 or 2x4, right? Let's say we want to make 10-inch bucktails. Put 2 nails on either end. Do a round bend. Put that on the end and just sort of use that as a gauge from where your bends should be. Now, one thing I do when I build a bucktail, a lot of guys will build them bottom up. I actually will put the clevis, the blade on, stack the beads, put the body weight, the skirt on, build it. Like, I put all that crap on first, right? I don't know why. That's just the way I do it. I'm not worried about the consistency, but if you want to do your line attachment and build it from top up, that can sort of allow you to have that consistency and length by just having a board with 2 nails of sort of you've got this measured out perfectly, and that's where your 2 bends need to be, right? The other comment I make is this, you know, if you're going for that consistency there, just build them that way. Put your 7 out or your 6 out, whatever you're building on, or for your rear hook on last, right? So you're just building this blade, bead, skirt conundrum there separately. What else? I mean, other than that, I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, building the bucktail, if you've never built one, take one of your bucktails and cut it apart and rebuild it. Do that about 10 times and you'll have it down, right? But like for that consistency factor, just kind of make some kind of armature, some kind of form that you're going to work in, and that should be enough. That or just measure it against a ruler. You know, if you really want things to be uniform, make sure you're, you know, buy X amount of beads of all the sizes. So you got a really uniform, it looks production. You know, break them apart in packs. Like I've talked to Christian at Hooked On, where he makes custom bucktails. And he gets a billion parts and pieces from the Muskie shop. And what he does is he just sits down and inventories them in separate sections. So here's this build and that build and all that stuff. So
sure.
It's easy. You know, Jay's got some great videos they've done over a lot of time over how to make a custom bucktail. Check those out there on the YouTube there. And I mean, it can't get much easier than that. I mean, if you can't do it, I'm not saying you should be able to do it, but it's easy. And I'll say this. You need to be able to rebuild a bucktail on your own. Just if you get on a bite and one just gets shenamored, right? Have some wire on hand. That's probably we talked about a minute ago, like how to repair a bulldog. Like bucktail wire and leader wire in your boat is invaluable when you need it.
Yep, I agree.
Parts or pieces. So have some bucktail shafts, like Spanky shafts, dude. What are those, like 051 or 05 something ridiculous?
No, that's the heavy stuff. That's 060.
Okay, exactly. So, you know, as an assortment, a handful of those, a handful of the mid, a handful of the light stuff just in your boat, there's so much you can do with that. You know, when you're in a pinch and you need to get creative, or let's say you're, and we've done it in the boat, Joe. We got some weird stagger blade or something funky going on, and we need to clone it, right? We got one and it's the hot bait, and we need to clone double chartreuse tins with whatever, you know, monkey purple skirt. Well, if you got enough parts and pieces on the boat, you can build whatever you need right then and there. Anyway, Friday. Gigantic 15% off the stock up for spring sale. Right after that, the next Sunday, a week from today, you're going to hear a heck of a freaking thing about the Titan Junior. So get ready for that. If you're not signed up, be there.
Yeah,
man, folks, we've just sort of plowed through. It is a long week. Jay and I are just beat to death. Next week, prepare for the extravaganza. We'll come at hard with you with a super long episode to make up for a kind of a shorty this week. Jay Bird, say good night.
Good night, everybody, and thank you.
Like
thank
Jake, you. Jake Smith in a sleeper hold. Say good night, Jake Smith.
Good night, Jake.
Later.